Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy, we once again don't know what Syracuse basketball is week.
We do not, although...
Not that I don't know that we actually did before, but now we're like, we're thrown directly back into mayhem after a couple of nice weeks of surging.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't know what to think, but I do know what to say, and I will get to that right after I do a first read for our sponsor this week. Troy Noons, an Absolute Podcast, is now sponsored by Sports Passport. Dan, if you've ever wondered how many Syracuse games you've been to and how that compares to your friends, or maybe you want to know what SU's record is in games you've attended, now there's an app for that. You can go to sportspassport.com or check out the app on the Apple App Store. It's an easy way to track, chronicle, and relive every game you've attended. So again, you can visit sportspassport.com or go to the App Store, sign up today, and check out every game you've been to. And not just for Syracuse games either. You can check out any game for all the major sports, some of the minor league games too. It's a lot of fun. As someone who likes to kind of look at stats and numbers like that and just kind of relive all the games I've been to in different sports, it's a fun time. I would highly recommend it.
Yes, I will definitely be hopping on that so that we can, obviously share ours since we both do a fair amount of things.
Indeed, indeed. All right, so getting back to Syracuse basketball, I know I wrote a piece the other day that kind of said, has SU flown too close to the sun? And I don't want to believe that we have and that we're like on the descent now, but at the same time, there are points to be made on both. On the one hand, Tyus Battle's been injured. Syracuse could have easily won the Louisville game for sure, if not for shooting itself in the foot multiple times. On the other, Syracuse also could have lost many of the games leading up to that game and the game against Pitt. So I'd like to stay optimistic and say SU finishes 2-2, but I'm also getting a little nervous now that this team might be out of gas after what was a harrowing stretch of kind of breakneck basketball.
Yeah, I'm not going to totally write off SU as like having re-collapsed or whatever. I think, like you said, the Louisville game was probably one that Syracuse shouldn't have been in as late as it was, and then had a chance to win. Pitt obviously is a team that always loses trouble, is on the road. Another 5-point loss. And neither of those games were absolute blowouts, which has kind of been the case for Syracuse this year in wins and losses. I think the previous 5-day winning streak probably buys us enough to like keep us in the conversation. And it feels like in all the bracketologies across the internet, we're at least like in the bubble talk, if not in the field, barely. But there's still work to do. I mean, you have two games against Georgia Tech, you have Duke and you have Louisville. If you split those, the easiest path, I guess, is sweeping Georgia Tech, which is not a super easy thing to do since the Yellow Jackets have been kind of feisty this year. But if they get two more wins and they have 18 going into the ACC tournament, then I think they probably need to win one or two there. But you're in it. You're right, like in the thick of things at least.
Right, and at this point too, like the numbers are starting to match up with the effort we've seen. Obviously, facing Duke and Louisville again will only help the strength of schedule. Georgia Tech's not really a knock on the strength of schedule. I mean, folks have been talking about it in the comments. You look at the numbers, Syracuse does stack up well against the bubble. I know on SB Nation's bracketology, Chris has kind of spelled out a path in, which includes the first four game against Tennessee. Now, Tennessee is, 14-12? Something like that.
Yeah, Tennessee's not very... I'm actually surprised they're, this far into the talks. I know they have the one over Kentucky, which is nice, but, 14-12 in the SEC?
Yeah, that's it's not great. But, yeah, I mean, the bubble's been pretty weak, and we talked about it last week. That kind of allows a team like Syracuse that, just like last year, might have some crappy losses, but also has some really nice wins on the mantle. And, again... You beat Georgia Tech twice. You're probably looking at needing to win at least one more game to feel better on Selection Sunday. If you go 2-2, but one of those wins, if one of those wins is at Louisville on the road, you could potentially go 1-3. But that win probably moves you across the line. If you go 2-2 in one of those wins against Louisville, no doubt. If you go 2-2 and the win is against Duke and at Georgia Tech, maybe, I think that that could be enough because you're picking up another road win. There's a lot of different ways to look at this, but I think 2-2 is kind of the bare minimum, saving some sort of miracle win at Louisville on the 26th.
Yeah, I think we're kind of, you know, right in that you know, bunch. And I think if you get three, if you get three here, which assuming, you know, that's two Georgia Tech and then one of either Duke and Louisville, then I think we're really in decent shape. And, you know, maybe you still need a win in the ACC tournament, but you should at least have a decent seed and have a favorable matchup as much as there is one in the ACC. And then I think, you know, I feel pretty decent going into Selection Sunday with 19 or 20 wins there.
Yeah, I'd agree. I know a lot of folks were saying, too, that, like, and this isn't to call out anybody in the comments, just to say that, like, they were saying that, you know, we were too pessimistic and a lot of others were too pessimistic in the fan base. What folks need to remember, though, is if we're being included as, like, maybe a 10 or 11 right now in most brackets, and that's after a two-game losing streak, that also assumes that nothing fishy happens in any of the conference tournaments. I mean, granted, there's not a ton of teams that can jump up and grab bids, and there's not a lot of, I know I've looked through bubble watches on a couple different sites, there's not a lot of mid-major teams that can get into large bid without winning their conference, but there are a few, and if you're a 10 or 11, you're petrified of how many of those you know, kind of fringe teams lose before their conference tournaments wrap up, how many bids they could potentially steal, because it could be one of yours if you're in those bottom few lines.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a major concern, one that SU hasn't really had to deal with too much, although last year, you know, we were cutting it pretty close and got, you know, seated a little higher than people expected, but that's always a major concern when you're on the bubble because, you know, you never quite know where a bid stealer will come from. Like you said, this year, there's not a lot of obvious ones, but definitely something to look out for as we get closer here. As we push towards March, that's when we start to really pay attention to, like, the rest of the landscape.
Indeed. So, Dan, looking backwards a little bit, what frustrated you the most about the Louisville game?
I actually didn't see the entire game live. I've seen, you know, most of it. And this happens a lot with this SU team, they just couldn't seem to quite get over the hump. It was like you felt like they were always a basket behind and they could never quite make up the difference. Obviously they forced overtime at the end, but then overtime they just seems like they ran out of steam. But the Syracuse team gets really frustrating because they looked so fluid on offense in moments, and then it seems like at least once per game, in this game it was the middle to end of the first half, before they started to crawl back, like the offense just totally falls apart. And it's weird, like obviously this isn't like a problem that's unique to Syracuse, but it seems very like way too frequent that the offense just totally loses the fundamentals of how it runs, and the flow goes to hell, and the passing is just not crisp and lazy and telegraphed, and it just kind of takes over the team. And it feels like, you know, we'd have one or two more wins if not for these like 5-minute stints where the offense just looks like it just has no idea what it's supposed to be doing.
No, completely. And if you look at just the team, I think it's a product of, especially when you had a guy like Tyus Battle who was sick and definitely wasn't 100% in this game or the Pitt game in particular. When you're relying on Lydon and White and to a lesser extent Gillen to be your entire offense, you know, I think Thompson kind of gets thrown in that Gillen pile of like sometimes he's hot, sometimes he isn't. That'll happen. You see things stagnate. I mean, you saw the guards basically ignored Lydon in the first half while he was camping out near the paint when he was wide open, even against Louisville bigs. Then the second half, Lydon tried to, you know, facilitate a little bit more, but then he started hanging around the perimeter too much. Andrew White started getting a little trigger happy. You know, he went 7-24 on the game and 2-14 from three. I mean, when SU was still very much, I mean, they made the comeback at the end of the second half, don't get me wrong, but when they were leading and then down by a basket, you know, the last thing they needed was Andrew White chucking up, you know, these not just threes, but off balance threes that were, you know, 5 feet out, just shots that didn't make any sense. And ones that, you know, could have cost us the game in regulation, but thankfully didn't. It was just kind of petrifying to watch as, as all the shooters went cold at once, and the offense, as you said, just didn't really know what it was doing. It wasn't a wasn't a very settling thing to watch if you're an SU fan, knowing that, that Louisville isn't the only team with that sort of size that can clog the middle. That.
Yep, was muted. I feel like I haven't done that in a couple weeks. No, I was saying it's funny that you you know, you bring up the size issue, because I think it was the Pitt game where whoever was on the call brought up Syracuse being the like one of the tallest teams in the country. I'm like, yeah, well, context is kind of important because we have a 7'4 player who isn't playing. We have a 6'9 player who plays as sporadically as possible. You're running basically a power forward at center at almost all times now. Like, the Syracuse team does not have a lot of size to go around. It has a lot of size, like, on the roster that's printed out and given out, but, like, Coleman plays, you know, not even every night, and when he does, it's briefly, and he's, you know, 6'9", maybe 6'10", if you're being very, you know, if you're being very kind. Chukwu obviously has a ton of size, and he helps, you know, the roster look good, but he hasn't played in months. So, yeah,
well,
this isn't,
length,
like...
length and bulk are two different things, too. Like, if you...
Yes.
Like, Lydon's tall, but he... you know, is barely like 220 soaking wet.
Yeah, and he played, I think Lydon on defense at least, like, actually probably plays bigger than he is with his penchant for blocking shots, but it's not like he's, you know, a super dominant defensive center. I think we get by better than we should with him in there, but he's not, I don't think he's the ideal guy there. So, yeah, I mean, it was an issue last year. We thought we had solved a lot of them with Coleman back and obviously Chukwu transferring in. But where this is a similar team in that regard as it was last year. And obviously, you know, things worked out and Syracuse made a run late last year. But it's going to be a lot to ask of Lydon to play the same kind of defense in the tournament this year as he did for that like stretch last year where he was blocking a bunch of shots every game.
No, I completely agree. I think that anyone expecting, I mean, SU could still make a run, but anyone expecting the same sort of run this year is kidding themselves, if only because of the personnel. It's not there to do things the same way as consistently as they were able to do last year. I mean, you've seen it for glimpses. The press really worked well against Louisville, I think, for parts of the game the other day. I think that the press obviously worked very well against Virginia. We saw it against Clemson. And NC State, but I don't know if once you get to the tournament, if teams don't let you hang around like that, especially once you develop a penchant for doing that, whenever you're kind of within striking distance, it becomes part of the scouting report, becomes something that you need to prepare for and do prepare for, and against more talented teams, I mean, Louisville, saying case in point, a more talented team like Louisville versus, you know, maybe a less talented team like NC State or Clemson, was ready for it. Yes, they still got shoved into overtime, but they were able to put the game away when they needed to.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just bet on like a crazy hot run again. Obviously, this team showed a little like that it can do it for small bursts so far this season. But you know, I think a Final Four run is probably not going to happen a second year in a row. But I mean, just get to the tournament, see what happens. At this point, I'd be thrilled to death there. And you know, if we're one and done, we're one and done. But making like rebounding far enough to make the tournament at all from where this team started, I think, is an accomplishment that we can all be pretty happy about. And then I say this knowing that, you know, if Syracuse gets in as a 10 seed and loses like by 4 to a 7 seed, we'll all be just unbelievably heartbroken. But for now, like, let's just see what happens here.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I know we talked about this last week too. It's just everyone's got to be a little realistic. Getting in is the number one thing, and then anything that happens from there, I don't want to bring up gravy, but at the same time, like you said, given where we were, given the fact that we were 11-9, given the fact that we could easily be on death's door already, getting in would be amazing, and something that I would applaud, and then again, just take whatever came next. Obviously, plenty of road ahead, though. SU could easily seal this thing up or screw it up in an impressive fashion over the last four games.
Yeah. Yes, unfortunately, you're right. hopefully, hopefully these last two games, obviously, you know, you have two losses by a total of 9 points. It's not like earlier in the season where you're losing to BC by double digits and losing to St. John's by 33. So, and it's not like Pitt and Louisville are bad teams by any stretch. Pitt's not had a great season, but they can still, you know, play with anyone pretty much, and Louisville's one of the best teams in the country. So I don't want to, like, overblow losing by four to the number 18 in the country. Even at home, even a game that probably would have gone a long way towards, not, I would say, locking up tournament hopes, but I would feel really, really good had they beaten Louisville. Unfortunately, you're not going to steal these overtime games every time. So we'll see. I think we still have, the nice thing about the ACC, we say it, like, every week, you always have opportunities, which is really all you could ask for when this team was sitting, you know, after that BC loss. Like, all you could ask for was these big games to get you, to launch you forward, and they've taken advantage for the most part. So we're definitely in not a great spot, but I think back in January, if you told us that we were where we are now, I would be very thrilled.
Same here. Looking around the scoreboard tonight, couple things that stand out. UVA is currently up on Duke 25-21. That game will be well over by the time people listen to this. But, Dan, who do we want to win that game?
Look at the ACC standings. I mean, I think in all likelihood UVA will finish ahead of us, right? Like, that's probably not much up for debate. I think there's a better chance that we finish ahead of Duke, if I remember what the ACC looks like right now. I'm pulling it up now. Mm-hmm. Actually, they're both 8-4. We're 8-6, so it's not that much of a difference. Duke actually has a better overall record. You know, we probably want Duke to win, just as we have Duke left. So I think we probably want Duke to win, and that to look better if we beat them.
That's fair. I mean, I will say that we already did beat Virginia, so there's obviously that.
You could go either way, I guess. I mean, it depends on, you know what? I think you might actually be right then, because Virginia we already have in the bank.
We assumed we can beat Duke, but that's no guarantee.
Yeah, so maybe, I mean, it depends on what's weighed heavier. No, I think you're probably right now that I think about it. We have Virginia, we've already have Virginia as a win. The better they look, the better the win looks. Duke, I think Duke, honestly, like, I'm not too worried about what people are going to think of Duke by the end of the year, because they're kind of a name brand, and they'll be a top four seed in all likelihood, and I think even if Duke was to lose to Virginia, like, I don't think it would really change that much about what people think of Duke. More Virginia, obviously, I think there's a little more malleability in terms of what people think of the Cavaliers, even if they've been, like, one of the most consistent teams in the country for 3 years now.
Well, especially after the loss to Virginia Tech the other night.
Yes.
That definitely, I mean, because at this point, that would be, what, 3 losses in 5 for Virginia, something like that?
Yeah, they've had a weird little spurt here. They have 3-5 now. That Nova game was actually in their last 5, which is weird.
Yeah, that stupid, like, late January game.
I forgot that was as late in the season as it was. So they've lost to Nova, us, and Virginia Tech in their last 5. They beat Tech their first time by, like, almost 30 points, which, you know, I always love when that happens in college basketball. When teams split games, but, like, one of the games is a 30-point win.
NBA Finals.
Right. And then they beat Louisville pretty handily. So it's not like the sky's falling. Like, when you throw in, like, a nice over Tech and a big, you know, blowout win over Tech, and, you know, you lost by 2 to Villanova, who's won 90 of their last 100 games, and you beat Louisville by 16. Like, it's hard to really... And then the losses, you know, 2 points to Nova, 4 points to SU, 2 points to Tech. Like, there are worse 5-game stretches, even at 2-3 there. I think the Hoos should feel pretty good about where they are.
Oh, agreed. I was just mad because I was writing that story for SB Nation that went up today about Virginia and how they're completely dependent. I mean, they're great, but they're also completely dependent on holding you under 60 points.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been the thing with them. And this year, I don't know that they have the same... obviously they're a very good team. I don't know that I trust the guys on this team, even Parentes, who's been, you know, a very good player during his career. I'd rather rely on a Malcolm Brogdon or a Joe Harris for a basket than I think the guys that they have this year. Parentes is great, but he's more of a distributor. You know, he's their leading scorer at 12.6 points a game. So it's not like they have a guy that you know is going to put in 20 right. that you can get the ball to. You know, he's
a
pretty
playmaker. Like Perrantes is a guy who can hit from outside here and there, can get hot. But Brogdon was like an actual two-way player who you feared when he was coming down the floor.
Yes. Unless you have Malachi Richardson on your team.
Yeah, and in that case. I noticed this year's Virginia team is actually better defensively than they were last year, which I found surprising.
That is interesting.
Yeah, they've played in 9 games where teams have scored more than 60 points total.
Are they playing slower? Like, is that some? I don't know how much slower they could play, but I wonder if some of that's tempo.
That was all tempo free stuff too.
Oh, that was tempo free.
Yeah. That was looking at tempo free stuff. I know they played against. This is the 9th game against top 30 offense via KenPom, and they're 4-4 in the first 8 games. And they've held those teams to 59.6 points per game.
Yeah, I mean that's impressive. They're just so good defensively. That whole system. I know. People complain about it, and it's not like a popular opinion to like. Kind of, I appreciate what they do. Like, it's
I've
not
grown to appreciate it more, especially since I saw how much SU struggled with it when we first got to the ACC, and what we've like scratched and clawed to do to it since.
Yeah, it's also like it's not like they just like they win rock fights like Pitt did a couple years ago, where like their offense is brutal to watch. Yeah. Like their offense
is brutally efficient.
It's super efficient. It's slow, but they like move the ball really well. I think it's actually pretty aesthetically pleasing. It's just done at such a slowed down pace compared to like what a lot of the ACC teams do. But I think when you actually like watch it and see how probing it is and how like every movement has like meaning to it, and they don't have like those. I mean, they do occasionally just because they don't have the great scorers, but I feel like they're less prone to those like awful moments of just dead ball play like I was talking about with SU before, where SU just it's like it's never played offense before. But when SU gets going, you know, they play really fast and they light it up from outside, and you know the peak of a good Syracuse run is awesome, where Virginia is just much more steady.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the whole point of it is you play at a slow pace, but you even that out with efficient shooting. So if you're going to fall behind against a team like that, you are just perpetually screwed.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is that they don't come. I mean, as we've learned, like they don't come from behind that well. Yeah. Which, and this year again, like I think that's another issue. I don't know. I just don't know who you feed. Like if you're Virginia, and you even saw this in our game, it wasn't a blowout or anything, but there was no obvious guy that you're like.
It's the only guy. It's the only guy that you could even imagine. Yeah. Taking that shot.
And even him, like, I'm not that he'll hit a big shot, but I'm not that terrified of him, you know, just getting the ball on the wing and popping it. And you know, he hasn't even shot nearly as well this year. I think part of that's based on the load he's taken on, where I think, was it last year that he was hitting, like, 50% of his threes because he was, like, the third or fourth option? This year, he's the number one guy. He's hitting, you know, just under 40%, which is pretty good, but he's definitely not nearly the efficient player he was. And he's the only guy, because I actually, when I first looked at this, I forgot Austin Nichols only played in one game. He scored 11 points in that game. So Perrantes is really the only guy who's averaging double digits. The thing is, they do kill you with depth because they have like 10, 11 guys that all play double-digit minutes and are all rotating in and out really, you know, a ton. But just no one overwhelming. And I guess it almost makes it more impressive because you look at like what Malcolm Brogdon's doing in the NBA. He's been one of the better unheralded rookies this year. He was a really good player. Even Joe Harris, you know, was an awesome 4-year player for them. This year, I mean, they just don't have a guy like that where he's going to strike fear into you offensively. And yet, they're, you know, I don't think they're quite as good this year across the board as they have been, but they're still, you know, easily a top 10 to 15 team. So you can't really say enough about what Tony Bennett's done there. He's just been so good since taking over that program.
I would concur. Looking, you know, I was going to go to the scoreboard, but I think instead, looking at the ACC standings, right now we are, what, seventh? Seventh.
I just had it up. Yeah. Yes.
Seventh. Now, Dan, where do you think we finish?
Seventh seems about right, honestly. I'm optimistic that we end up finishing in the top half, which would be nice, get a bye in the tournament, I believe.
I think we basically have to. Well, we almost have to, looking at the teams around us. I mean, Virginia Tech's the only one with a tiebreaker on us.
Yeah. Miami, we have it over. Tech is yet to be decided. They're at 6-7. Notre Dame, obviously, is one ahead. They would have it. Yeah, I mean, is if we're projecting to go 2-2 down the stretch, which is obviously no given, that puts us at 10-8. I would struggle to think that at 10-8 or even 9-7, we wouldn't be in the top half of the conference. So that'd be nice. That'd be a solid accomplishment again, like these paired victories from where we're coming from. But if you had told us again in January that Syracuse was going to finish in the top half of the ACC and get a bye in the ACC tournament in Brooklyn, I think we would have all signed for that pretty quickly.
I would concur. Other scoreboard notes before we get to one that actually matters to us. Tulane is beating SMU by 11.
Go Wave.
Yeah. Roll damn Wave. This is notable because Tulane is terrible at basketball and SMU is not. And it's fun to see the Green Wave potentially do something good here.
Yeah. When was the last time Tulane made an NCAA tournament?
This is going to be some great radio.
Fam.
Tulane Green Wave Wikipedia.
I'm sorry I've done this to all of you. I take full responsibility of this awesome segment of everyone just like start skipping ahead on the podcast thing. Like do that like 15 seconds ahead like twice or three times. The last time they made the tournament 95. Was 1995 in a string of appearances, 92, 93, and 95. And that is the NCAA tournament history of the Tulane Green Wave. They've actually won a game in every tournament they've made, which is amazing.
Way to go, Tulane. I forgot that Mike Dunleavy was their coach.
Yeah, I just remember that when I clicked on Wikipedia.
Yeah, Tulane. Okay, so games that actually matter to us. South Carolina lost again, this time to Arkansas at home.
Yeah, I think South Carolina is kind of what they are. I think they're in the tournament for sure, unless something crazy happens. I'm going down to visit friends there, and they just told me that South Carolina is playing Tennessee, I think, on next Saturday, so I'm going to that game. So I will get to see a game at what is actually supposed to be a pretty good home court in Columbia. So that'll be interesting. Hopefully I won't bring... Well, actually, I was, you know, Syracuse beat Virginia the last game I saw, so I guess I can't really be bad luck. So yes, I will be seeing SEC basketball, just what everyone goes to the Southeast to watch.
I mean, you know what? That Florida-Auburn game last night was a hell of a lot of fun.
I caught a bit of that. Not too much, though.
It's like 114-95 or something was the final score?
There was 114 points scored by a team in the SEC?
In regulation.
Wow.
It was the most points Florida scored in a game since 2000.
I believe it. That's nuts.
It's the only reason I
Auburn,
know that.
Auburn's kind of trash.
They are trash. But it was tied 50-50 at halftime.
I'm being told also in things that are happening right now. I'm being told Deion Waiters is doing things. Yeah, he had 21 points against the Rockets, and they're gonna win.
Yeah, Deion.
Deion's like my number one rooting interest in the NBA right now.
It sucks because I hate the Heat. But then Deion's so much fun to root for.
And the Heat are nothing about them streams like the Heat of any Heat era at this point, except for Pat Riley's like looming visage on the sideline.
Just as a Knicks fan, I feel like I'm obligated to hate them.
That's fair. Yeah. I know that. I mean, that's like a sneaky, intense 90s rivalry.
Yeah.
Deion's just so much fun. He is like, Deion is very much living his best NBA life at the moment. Just doing all the things that, like, it's basically if everything Deion, like, is about, like, worked out really well for a stretch of time, like, that's what's happening. It's not like Deion's changed his game that much. He's still Deion, and he will always be Deion, but he's just playing awesome. Like, he's just having an awesome season. He's averaging, you know, 15.7 points, and I want to see what the average is, like, just in the last month, because he's just been going nuts. And the Heat have kind of crawled back into, like, I don't know if you...
Somehow.
Yeah, I guess. They're like 8 games under 500, but that is playoff contention-ish, I guess.
Yeah, whatever.
And they're just like a very weird, strappy team that is red hot. Dragic is a nice player. Whiteside is Whiteside. It's an interesting bunch, and Deion Waiters is like the weird leader of that cavalcade of strange players.
I want them to keep winning, because I want as few teams as possible to be competing with the Knicks for a top 5 seed.
That's fair. Also, with all that said, Deion's PER is still under 15.
Of course it is.
Deion, Dion could have a Hall of Fame career, like, from here on out, and he still would never did his PER over 15. That Josh Hollinger just designed that stat to, like, just make Dion angry. Odds are Dion doesn't know what that is, but...
No, he doesn't care what that is, because his thing is, it doesn't matter if I take 15 shots or 25 shots. If I score 20 points, that's all that matters.
Men lie, women lie, player efficiency rating lies, buckets don't.
All right, so as we head into halftime today, I just want to give another shout-out to our sponsor, Sports Passport. Like I said, gives you all the information you want to know about games you've been to, gives you kind of a year-by-year look at stats. I know I have my stats going all the way back to 1997. It tracks further back than that, but that was the first game I went to. It was a Mets game. I got to see, you know, year-by-year. You get to look at, like in 2015, I had Dodgers season tickets, so I went to 28 games total, all sports. Like 2016, I went to 17 games. Haven't been to any games this year, but going to be changing that soon. And then you can even break it down, by sport year. So, like, all time, I've been to 19 Mets games, and the Mets went 9-10 in that stretch. And I can see top performances. So, like, one of the games I went to, for the Dodgers last year, Kershaw pitched a, three-hit shutout. And so, like, that's highlighted as, like, one of the top performances I've ever seen. So, again, things like that, super cool over on Sports Passport. Would highly recommend everyone signs up. We'll have a link to the App Store as well as just the website on the podcast blog post on Nude Magician. But, again, you can go to sportspassport.com or download it. Highly recommend it.
I just traded mine while we were recording and put in the games I saw this year. I have a lot of work to do if I want to get all my Mets games in, mostly because I, good Lord, if I could even remember all of the ones I went to in the last couple of years living in the city.
This is when having a photographic memory helps, Dan.
I guess I have Foursquare check-ins I can probably double. I'll remember all the Syracuse teams.
Yeah.
Going back, for sure. I'll remember all those.
Well, you can even check the box score on that. Just look at every game that happened while you were there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I missed a football game at the Dome. I don't know that I missed a basketball game at the Dome besides winter break. So, I mean, I'll have no problem remembering those.
Right.
Mets will be tough. I mean, like, I've only been to a handful of Packers games ever because they are in Wisconsin. But yeah, definitely going to try to get this together probably tonight. I'll probably end up staying up till like 2 a.m. because I'm dumb and filling in a bunch of stuff. And then I'll be like, oh, now I have this cool thing that's complete and legit. So you can look at all of my awesome attendance stats. Let me see if what it's telling me already. I mean, I have like this year's game so far, so we're a long ways off, but we'll see.
I have faith. I know that I actually did the same thing. Because Sports Passport used to be a bunch of separate sites that were passporty. And then they actually got purchased by New York Life. And then they became one holistic site that logged all of your games, which definitely made things much cooler and more interactive. And then the app launched recently. So, again, fun stuff.
So far, the best performance I have is Andrew White on February 4th against Virginia. So that's definitely going to be up there. I will keep you all updated in the comments, I guess. or not. I don't know. Maybe. We'll see how it goes.
Perhaps. Okay. So our usual halftime segment that we will still be commencing with. Dan, what have you been drinking?
A good amount this week. I came through for everyone. Let me open up. I have Untappd open. I'm just sending my beers. One thing I did, just kind of spur of the moment the other night, went to Big Alice Brewery in Long Island City, which I had not been to before. And I don't think I'd ever even had anything by them. They're a small operation just in like a little warehouse in LIC in Queens. Had a bunch of stuff from them. Pretty impressed overall. I don't know that anything like blew me away, but I think most of the stuff was pretty good. And they're also, like, I appreciate, like, they had, like, 13 beers on tap, and they were all very distinct and very different, which I always appreciate. They definitely, like, put themselves out there and try stuff. So I had their Lemongrass Kolsch, which was super refreshing, very, very light, very drinkable. I had their Ravenswood, which was one of the better ones I had. That was kind of this, like, deeper flavored Belgian Strong, which was delicious. I had a Queen's Honey Brown, which tasted nothing like the honey brown that you can have for another couple weeks at Chuck's. Definitely more of a brown than honey. Will not give you the raging Chuck's hangovers. Probably the most interesting thing I had by far was a jalapeno rye, which you expect to be kind of like spicy, in like the habanero stolpen, which we've talked about, which I don't know that I will ever need to drink again, but like, cause it was legitimately spicy. This really wasn't at all. It just had jalapeno flavor, which I appreciated. Like they didn't go for like the spicy, like shock beer. It was literally just like, this beer tastes like a jalapeno, but like, it really wasn't spicy at all. It just tasted like pepper, which was super, super interesting. And then I had their peppermint stout, which was delicious. Really, really nice, not overpowering. Probably my favorite one I had from them was a sour one with cranberries. Had pretty solid cranberry flavor. Quite sour, but I like my sours like legit sour. And then, not from them, I had the Apricot Rebus from Grim Artisanal, another New York City brewery, the other day. I've had that before. Grim makes really good, just does really good work. And that one is quite delicious and very refreshing.
Dan, I think you finally beat me in a week.
Look at that. All I'd do is go to a brewery like one random Wednesday night and try like half their stuff.
There you go. Yeah, I was actually skiing all weekend. So I, well, snowboarding, but nonetheless, spent the weekend with my in-laws and wife and brother-in-law just kind of hanging out and drinking whatever we brought up, which was just from Costco. So still some good stuff. Before I left, though, I did have, I don't know if you've been to OEC Brewing up in Connecticut. But
I've not been. I've had some of their stuff.
Yeah,
but I've not been.
A buddy of mine sent a bottle of Artemis.
Okay,
that was really good. I have another bottle of Plumtastic actually that I that I'm going to bust open the next week or so. That I'll be sure to report on because that one's supposed to be pretty fantastic. I had some Lagunitas Pils while I was there. Had some Racer 5, a little something something from Lagunitas, some Beechwood Foam Tap, which has become a favorite now that it's in six packs, and then I had some Ponto and some Swami's from Pizza Port. So yeah, pretty quick quick rundown for me this week.
For all of you who had like me plus 600 in terms of more beers this week, you can cash in.
All right. So spring football. We know we've been talking about it a little bit. Now that we actually have a date for it to start, March 21st. Through April 22nd, it's actually a lot shorter than normal, I feel. I don't know if that's just because he feels like Dino Babers feels like the team knows the system now or whatever, or the fact that there's only 60 players on campus who have scholarships right now or what have you. This is definitely a shorter spring practice. I don't think we're going to see much in the spring game again, but focusing first on the running backs, I know I focused on quarterbacks last week in an article and focused on running backs this week. Dan, what do you think of the running back position looking really, really far out right now?
It's hard to know because we've kind of hinted at a lot of potential movement there. Obviously, we had Strickland as the main guy last year, but by main, I mean like he had the most yards by default, but really no one made a huge impact. I know we've talked about him possibly switching to receiver. I don't know if the program has really put anything out there about that, but it seems like that idea is gaining traction in the general like Syracuse internet.
Somebody mentioned it world. To AJ Daniels before he decommitted.
Yeah, so that makes it seem like a thing that might happen for sure. I wouldn't mind it just as you know, he didn't have like the best year running back, and I think we could use a little more help in the slot, but I also think Mo Neal, I would love to see Mo Neal take on a bigger role. I think there's a fair that Mackenzie Pierre is one of the guys. I mean, he seems to be one of the guys that's gaining the most buzz in terms of a person who could play right away. And in this offense, like, there's nothing to say that he can't kind of split the role or play in the backfield and play in the slot. Obviously, Babers has no problem being creative on offense. So I think running back's probably one of the big mystery positions of the team. And we all, as we've said, you know, Dino Babers is a running back himself. He wants to run the ball. At Bowling Green, he did run the ball to great effect. It was a team that ran the ball more than it threw, I believe. A slight breakdown there. Last year, obviously, was not how this team wanted to be running, and it was just like the most effective way based on what we could do. So hopefully we see more production out of the group this year, and I think that's probably one of the things we will see. If we learn anything this spring, the running back position will be an interesting one to pay attention to, because if there's a position change, odds are it'll happen in the spring, and we kind of will get a sense of who's carrying the rock the most. I think if I had to bet, I bet Moneal ends up being the guy this year, but it could, you know, who knows?
Yeah, I know Stephen Bailey said that he felt Dante Strickland was going to stick around in the backfield and that Moneal was going to go out to the slot. I don't know if we see the change in the spring, if only because there's only two running backs on the roster anymore. So I feel like for the purpose of spring practice, the change, we might see more throwing out of the backfield just to gain more of a rapport, you know, pass and catch wise between Neal and Dungy and Strickland and Dungy. I know Strickland's been catching passes from Dungy for 2 years now. Neal may have caught like one pass last year. I don't have any stats in front of me, but just to maybe grow that rapport before, you know, summer camp starts. And once July hits, I think you start to see, you know, Pierre and Sturginger kind of shift in. I know I alluded to Chris Elmore too. You know, he's not going to be a regular guy to carry the ball, but he's somebody who, he's big, he's got size, he's got experience in what seems like short yardage and goal line situations. I think just having him there and not having to rely so heavily on Dungy would be a huge, 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 you know, change for this team and really kind of help out everybody, you know, because the last thing, you know, two guys that are like under 180 pounds like Strickland and Neal need is getting hammered by, you know, eight in the box at the goal line. The last thing Dungy needs is getting hit by anybody, but especially, you know, a defensive front stacking eight again. Having somebody like Elmore, who's around like 270 or so, being able to pound it up the gut would be, I think, a huge, huge improvement, and one that that really helps this offense run a little bit better on third down, when I feel like teams could really sell out on the blitz against Syracuse when they knew that either we were going to pass or that Dungy was going to roll out and sneak for a first down.
Yeah, I also just love having like unique people in the backfield, so I'm all for Elmore having a role back there. I miss the tank package. Although it sounds like he might just legit play like H-back, fullback in this offense. I don't imagine he'll be doing it at 270. I think he'll probably try to touch down to like 250.
I want him back at defensive tackle after Slayton and Samuels and everybody's gone.
Who knows? I have no idea. I feel like he would just be there. Like, I know the running back numbers aren't great, but I feel like, I mean, I don't know that having, unless Babers just like really has some big ideas, I don't know that having an H-back is all that important, considering the fact that defensive tackle depth has been an issue for like 5 years. Right. Since basically that Andrew Lewis team where they had like the three guys that were all seniors. I think defensive tackle is just one of the more valuable positions. So I think if he had his future there, I think we'd probably just see him starting there. But who knows?
Right. Fair. And then I guess obviously the last kind of lingering thing for all fans right now, talking about the running back position, is Gus Edwards. Dan, right now he's not coming. Do you think that changes, or do you think that we end up having to move on?
I wouldn't bet on it changing. I think if he was to fight it, he could probably get it too, but he might just not want the fight, which is understandable. It's the fact that we haven't heard much in that department. I wouldn't expect the things to change there. Obviously, it's unfortunate because I know we're both pretty big advocates for players being able to do, like, just having the right to play where they want to play. You know, considering everything else that works against him in the system right now. But it doesn't sound like he's super interested in making a big prolonged battle with Miami over this. I wouldn't expect the status quo to change. Obviously, if it does, he would be a great addition. But I am not banking on it by any means.
So he's probably Rutgers then.
Yeah.
It's about right based on what he's looking for.
I mean, sure, I guess.
Probably.
I guess it's close to home. It's actually really close to home. Staten Island's right there.
Yeah. Staten Island, a.k.a. North Jersey.
Staten Island, a.k.a. like, just give it. So, I've long contended that they should trade Hoboken to Staten Island.
That's fine. And I'm saying that as someone who was born on Staten Island. That's right. I was born on one of the worst islands, and then I moved to another one of the worst islands after that.
What John's telling you is he's willing to become a native New Jerseyan for the good of mankind.
I mean, potentially. Anyway, one more thing I want to discuss before we get into our usual bracketology nonsense, other bracketology nonsense, this time with the women's team. The SU women are not locked into a spot right now, but they're pretty much in. Dan, I don't know if you saw the bracketology from yesterday on ESPN, but SU got knocked down to a number 6 seed after a loss to Duke. And that's bad because there's the potential to, Washington and Gonzaga in Seattle, which is obviously not good.
Yeah, I like that we'd be sent to Seattle for the two teams from there. I know Gonzaga is not in Washington, in Seattle itself, but yeah, it's close enough. And then would potentially be in line to play UConn in Bridgeport if things got that far. UConn, like, that game could be in the Terrier Dome. That game could be at Jim Boeheim's house. It could literally be, like, on the top of an orange tree, and it wouldn't matter. But I don't think that if you're going to get a choice of where to play UConn, Bridgeport, Connecticut is probably not the optimal place.
No, not at all. And I think in general, yeah, like SU, I feel like the route that we had last week, we were a 5 seed that was potentially looking at a 4. It seemed like, you know, we were on the fringe of getting a home field, well, home court for the first two rounds. I still feel like we can still get that, but a lot of that depends on beating Notre Dame, because BC and Pitt are terrible, and those were our last two games of the regular season. I'm not banking on us beating Notre Dame. We haven't done so since 2002. Dan, do you think we have any chance of beating them, or do you think it's just too far gone, and we're going to have to play our luck in the ACC tournament, and then hope we get the right kind of route like we did last year?
Yeah, I think it's more likely that they're going to have to take some games in the ACC. I don't know what Wake Forest is like in women's. I know Pitt is usually pretty awful, so they'll probably win those two. Notre Dame doesn't seem like they're the same level of Notre Dame team that they have been for like most of the decade. They're at number 7, where usually they're pretty solid top 5 stalwart. But they are a team that usually beats up on SU, so I wouldn't pencil that one in by any means. It does seem like overall, though, the team is trending in the right direction. Aside from the Duke loss, like they've won 5 of their last 6 after a pretty up and down start to the year, especially coming off of the championship game berth. So it wouldn't shock me if SU has a nice run, you know, continues on that run and takes momentum into the postseason and maybe wins a game or two in the ACC and getting into that, you know, getting to a line where you can host those first few games in the dome would be huge. So hopefully they can pull that off and get a nice easier run here than the Seattle to Bridgeport setup that we currently have, which really again could not be worse.
All right, and then lastly, of course, what Dan and I do once the season starts coming to a close, bracketology nonsense, where we sit here, make some choices based on virtually nothing but gut feeling, and yeah.
It's America in 2017. Yeah, I mean, come on, what do you want from us?
That's the only thing. This is actually the most reliable thing you're hearing in your ears today.
Probably. The only truth is our truth, personally, so...
So, Dan, let me know when you have SB Nation's bracketology up.
And then we can... Oh, it's up.
Oh, it's up. We are good to go.
So ahead of the game today, aside from the fact that I had untapped up and then forgot to actually click on the right link earlier. And also the Tulane thing, which cost us a solid minute and a half. No, we're all set here.
All right. So, East bracket first. I'll look through the top half. I'm seeing a really fun Villanova-Wisconsin game. I'm seeing a really fun UCLA-Kentucky game. And I'm going to go UCLA over Villanova in the Elite Eight here.
Yeah, I see Wisconsin there, like you brought up. Is it just me? What is Wisconsin, like, why are they just totally getting slept on so hard?
Probably that Northwestern didn't help.
Yeah, but Northwestern's not that bad. they're going to be in the tournament for the first time ever. No, like, Wisconsin is having a great year. The fact they weren't in the top 16 that was put out by the committee the other day was... The Big Ten does suck, but, like, they're one of the 16 best teams, I think.
Oh, I agree with that. I just think the Big Ten sucks, where everyone's like, eh, but are they really?
Yeah, I mean, again, you will not find me complaining about the Big Ten being bad. Like, that's just not my game at all. I'm totally cool with the Big Ten being bad. I just feel like Wisconsin, like, as a five, like, they should be at least a four, but whatever. I still think Villanova comes out of that top part. UCLA, Villanova will be an interesting matchup. I trust Villanova a little bit more. I just think they're a little more consistent. UCLA, just, they have some really impressive wins. Lonzo Ball's awesome. But I just think Nova is just a better all-around team, so I'm taking them out of the top. I also think UCLA could probably end up being a little higher than a four here.
I think they deserve to be a little bit higher. I mean, they're in the committee says that they're a four. I think they're more of a three right now based on the wins they have.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the other threes, Virginia, Florida, Arizona, I like them more than Florida.
Yeah, although Florida's recent play has been pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, part of this, the SEC's garbage. Like, the SEC's just straight trash. They are a three-bid league, probably, unless we are playing Tennessee in here, which I am very suspect about. Yeah, out of the bottom, I know I've been kind of high in Notre Dame. They've kind of fallen off a little bit recently. I'll just go with the Louisville-Kentucky matchup, because, you know, that's what the people want. Louisville won the first game. I don't know. Kentucky's been playing kind of weird lately as well. They've had some injury issues. I think I would take Louisville again. I think Louisville, they're a veteran club. Pitino coaches well in the tournament. So I'm doing chalk. I'm doing Louisville Villanova. And I think I would take Louisville. I think their style of play is often a problem for other teams. I think eventually Villanova's run here is going to come to, they're going to have a bad loss at some point. So I'll take Louisville to beat Villanova in the Elite Eight and go to the Final Four.
I'm going to fill out the rest of my Elite Eight with Louisville, so that I'm taking UCLA over Louisville. But I did want to point out the really fun Northwestern-TCU matchup.
Ooh, yeah.
7-10 slot. Now, I wrote a story.
That's like the super unlikely, but these teams are in it? Okay.
Yeah. I wrote a story about both teams as kind of like, you know, comparing resumes and looking at their, you know, tournament droughts, things like that, a couple weeks ago. But, yeah, that would just be a fun game. Very purple, but also very unlikely in a lot of ways. I would entertain a Northwestern-Louisville upset, if just because, like, Louisville just lays that, like, random egg in the first round, in the first or second round, like, every few years. And, like, Northwestern does seem like the type of team that, like, if they can win a couple in the Big Ten tournament, gain some momentum, like, they seem like a team that could really kind of ride their way on, like, just guts alone through a couple of rounds.
Yeah, and they, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, like, Northwestern's just, like, all seniors this year, I think, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so now they're seniors that don't have tournament experience because no one ever at Northwestern has had tournament experience. But generally, like, I think that's a decent bet, and TCU, I don't know. They're an interesting team. They're a nice story. Both teams are great stories.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be shocked.
Instead of losing the tournament, though.
That's true. I kind of forgot about that. Yeah, I would go with Northwestern there. I trust them a little more. And that's one of those games that I feel like could happen, just because we know that the tournament likes to kind of create these fun little mashups. And having Northwestern, which has never been, versus TCU, which I don't remember the last time TCU was in it, and certainly hasn't even been close. I think that sounds right, and they haven't been close since they joined the Big 12, so that could be a fun one.
Agreed. Going down to the West first, you know that I hate Gonzaga, so I'm picking West Virginia out of the top half. And looking at the bottom, I'm still going to ride with Virginia. I think Virginia beats Oregon. And then I'm going to go with Virginia beats West Virginia in the regular season rematch. And Virginia, despite all of my comments earlier, gets themselves to the Final Four.
I'm really tempted to take Michigan State beating Gonzaga just because it's Michigan State in March. Right, and like they'll probably end up going on a run because they lost the first round last year when they sort of been they were what number two tournament favorite. But watching them, they're not that good. Obviously, and even as a 9 seed, I think they're getting a lot of credit here, being that high up, even like compared to like where Syracuse is. Yeah, and unlike Syracuse, like there just aren't that many wins to be had in the Big Ten. Like, oh, you beat Iowa. Congrats, great.
you did it.
Yeah, a winner is you. I don't know. It's probably just a blind like name thing. I'm gonna stick with Gonzaga coming out of the top. West Virginia is interesting. The advanced numbers really like them. Cincinnati's obviously just been red hot. I think they're what 20-2 this year. Like they're just really riding a wave. They're gonna win the AAC. It looks like. Although I don't think it would shock anyone if Monmouth came out of nowhere and beat them, just because Monmouth is a pretty solid club. A Cincinnati West Virginia matchup in the round of 32 could be a lot of fun, though. The game would probably be played in the 50s.
That's fine. Although Princeton is like that typical 13 that can beat a West Virginia or a lot of other teams.
Mm.
But we're not talking brackets right now. We're talking who's actually going to win the thing. That's another conversation.
Out of the bottom, it's just not a great group.
No, this is kind of ugly.
Yeah. Like, Virginia is a solid team. I like Oregon a decent amount more, honestly, even with that, like, collapse they had a couple weeks I think last week against UCLA. I think they're a really solid club. I'll take Oregon to beat Gonzaga in a very boring 1-2 of Pacific Northwest schools and have the Ducks go to the Final Four.
Fine. All right.
In just a matchup that I can imagine. I would just look forward to your tweets and your angry, why is this happening?
So much teeth gnashing. okay, so, just like we feared, Duke gets put in a region where they can definitely get to the Final Four, despite being a 4 seed. I've got Duke coming out of the top half of the Midwest against Kansas. And then in the bottom half, I want to say Florida State, but Florida State's giving me a reason to doubt them, so I'm going with Arizona. I think this is actually a really favorable bottom half of this bracket for Arizona. Purdue's probably the only team that could really test them. Unfortunately, they faced them in the second round. But, yeah, I'm going with Arizona-Duke in the Elite Eight, and I'm going to go with Duke, as much as it really pains me to say that.
I don't think it would shock anyone if that's exactly how it played out. I will say, like, the chance of, like, a Duke-Wichita matchup would be very interesting in the round of 32.
Oh, yeah, because Creighton's going to lose. Well, Creighton's not going to be a 5 seed when the tournament rolls around.
No, Creighton's just, I mean, they've actually, like, rebounded a fair amount considering, like, the injuries, but they're just not, like, they're not the same team as they were earlier in the year. This is just, like, the total, like, let's just throw all the interesting mid-majors in here. You got a perennial NCAA tournament invitee, Belmont. You have
UTA,
St. Mary's, Utah. You have Wichita and Dayton, and even UTA. So this is like definitely one of the ones. This will be the one where everyone like has their real fun, like interesting brackets. Out of the top, I'll go with Kansas over Duke. I just think I trust Kansas' backcourt more. Duke has just been, I don't know. I think there's a great chance that they're the best team in the country by the time we get to the tournament because of all the talent. But they just haven't quite gotten to the point where I'm comfortable putting them in as a Final Four team. And if they actually start peaking, like they'll be higher than a 4. I think there's a chance that they'll just go on a crazy run and end up as like a 2. Kansas, I just trust more now. The backcourt's so good. Jackson keeps on getting better. And then the combo of Graham and, the best player, Frank Mason. Ugh, God. only the best player in the country. Should probably remember his name. Just really solid. I don't know. The front court kind of scares me a little bit. It's not that great. Obviously, they get some decent performances from Brad, but not every night. But overall, I just trust Kansas a little more, and I think backcourts win in the tournament. In the bottom, it's actually really interesting. Florida State, I think, I don't trust them totally. Maybe that's partially because Syracuse beat them. St. Mary's is super interesting. I could totally see St. Mary's coming out of that bottom four. I don't think Michigan's any good.
No, they're garbage.
I agree with you with Arizona. I think Purdue is super interesting, if only because of Swanigan, who might be the best player in the country. He's definitely top five. I think Arizona, top to bottom, is probably better. They have Markkanen, who's been really good. They have Alonzo Trier back. I'll take Arizona, and I'll take Arizona to beat Kansas, actually. I think Arizona will peak late, and I'll have Arizona, and I just don't want all the number one seeds. So I'll have Arizona coming out of the Midwest here.
Fair enough. And then last but not least, the South. All right, so I got VCU knocking off Baylor in the second round. That's going to happen.
I love that.
I've got Butler and VCU getting themselves into the Sweet 16, for sure. This bracket's gonna be carnage. I've got Florida and North Carolina on the other side, chalk. Yes, I know disloyalty at Syracuse is in this bracket, and I'm gonna go with North Carolina over Butler in the Elite Eight.
Let's see. I agree with you on VCU. I like them against USC. I would love to pitch them against Baylor, because I think, I forget if you're on the same, you're one of the people that have been burned by Baylor in the NCAA tournament a couple times, but Baylor,
I've been burned Baylor, by Iowa State. You and me are in the Iowa State bucket.
Yeah.
Baylor, I haven't been, actually, no, I always pick against Baylor in the tournament just because of my hatred of them.
I may start just based on life. picking against Baylor in life, I think, is a sound moral strategy at this point. Also, I'll take VCU there. I'll actually take VCU to just win that whole section of the bracket, knock off Butler or South Carolina, and go to the Elite Eight. And then Will Wade will probably take like the NC State job and never be heard from again.
Your prize for winning is living in Raleigh for the rest of your life.
You are now destined to 6 years of NC State shit. Then in the bottom, I'll be the slightly more loyal idiot. I'll say Syracuse goes on a mini run, beats Tennessee because Tennessee sucks, beats Maryland because Mello Trimble will forget how to play basketball in his own, and beats Florida because Florida played in the SEC and that's not basketball. But North Carolina will clean up in their section, and then the North Carolina will probably beat us by 20. And then North Carolina will handle VCU and go to the Final Four.
So I realized I picked three ACC teams to make the Final Four.
I had Louisville over Villanova, right? Yeah. I had Louisville and North Carolina, and then I had Oregon and Kansas, which would be a pretty fun Final Four.
Yeah, I've got UCLA and Virginia, and I'm picking UCLA over Virginia on one side. And then I've got Duke and North Carolina on the other, which would be narrative ball times 1,000 in the worst game you ever witnessed. To the point where CBS would pay to have Dick Vitale announce the game with them. just for the sake of posterity. And making sure that nothing sounded different than it normally does. I would pick North Carolina, and UCLA North Carolina would actually be a really fun national championship game. I could see very little defense being played, and I would go with UCLA barely.
Let's see. So I have Kansas versus UNC, right? Is that how this... Okay. Yeah. I actually picked Arizona. Yeah. Didn't I? Yes. Arizona, that was only 5 minutes ago. I don't know. I'm high in Arizona this week. I'll take Arizona. I think they're just very athletic and very talented, and I think they're just kind of due. Like, I feel like they're just kind of due to make a run here. They've been very good under Sean Miller. They've made, like, these fairly deep tournament runs, but they haven't had, like, that signature one yet. And I just feel like the momentum to just swing in their direction in the right time. So I'll go with Arizona. And then Oregon Nova, or Oregon Louisville. I just trust Louisville more there. I think Oregon can be disrupted, as evidenced by the UCLA disaster the other day. So Louisville, Arizona, I'd probably go Louisville. I think, you know, why not give Rick Pitino an NCAA championship right before
he stripped the other two?
Yep. I mean, there's not much better that could happen with the NCAA, just like the never-ending shit show of NCAA investigations, whether they're warranted or not, than Louisville winning probably like 2 months before they get sanctioned for a prostitute scandal. That's pretty perfect. So yeah, we'll deal with that. Why not?
I think we just painted some pretty fun tournament pictures, Dan.
I mean, it could be worse. We could give them the Final Four of Louisville, Baylor, Michigan State of recent vintage, and who would be in the other one?
Somebody's terrible.
Who would be in the who's the most scandalous team Bama. Of the top of the top right?
Top right. Michigan.
There's no one particularly scandalous in this whole region.
Duke. Seth Allen.
Grayson Allen.
Sorry,
it would be Duke, just based on they'd be like the weird moral team, which would be rough, and none of us want that. No. So yeah, that's probably what would be forced upon the rest of the country is, oh, you're gonna root for Baylor over Duke? Really? You are? Okay.
Yes, 100%. Yes.
I know Grayson trips some people, but okay, I see. All right.
And on that note. Dan, I think that does it for this week.
Yes. Hopefully we get back to good weird Syracuse season versus this week of more of a down part of the weird Syracuse season.
Agreed. So this has been Troy Noon's Absolute Podcast. That was Dan. I'm John. Thanks for listening. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on any other service you may use, and go Orange.
Go Orange. Thank you.